So we like to think there is some deep cultural debate going on regarding the availability of firearms in the United States. And we hear those arguments during political campaigns, not much during this political campaign, but we periodically do. We talk about this debate after bloody shootings like the one in Colorado and the one in Tucson a few years back. But in fact, guns are deeply a part of American culture. From the Second Amendment itself to the Industrial Revolution, gun manufacturing produced in America, to the pop cultural profile of guns today in music and movies and elsewhere, the better we understand that cultural piece, perhaps the better our political debates will be on this issue and the more responsible our laws will be. It's something of the premise of the book of my next guest, Craig Whitney, the author of Living with Guns, A Liberal's Case for the Second Amendment. Craig, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, first of all, what caused you to take up this? It was a series of observations that led you to really delve deeply into this cultural significance of guns in America.
Well, I did military service in the Vietnam War and then was a correspondent for the Times in Vietnam and many other places in Europe. And all through those years that I was a correspondent, things like gun massacre would happen. And I would read about it and wonder afterwards, like many of my friends in Europe, why didn't anything happen after this? Why are we kind of paralyzed in our ability to respond to gun violence episodes like that? And I decided after I retired from the Times that I'd have the time to do some research, look into why we have the Second Amendment, what it meant at the time, what it means now, and how we got to this point where we can't discuss rationally gun rights in America.
Do you think we're paralyzed or that on some level we actually do intuitively think this is normal in a country that is surrounded by guns?
Well, some people think that. I think the problem began to arise in the 60s when all the turbulence and racial violence and one thing and another led the large parts of the middle class to fear for their safety. And they were encouraged to think by the gun lobby at the time that having guns for self-defense would be the way to do this. At the same time, gun violence rose to such a level that a commission in 1969 actually recommended seizing and outlawing handguns for almost all Americans. And I think the NRA and groups like it who support gun rights today have played on this fear that somehow the government was going to take your guns away and it's hard for us who support reasonable gun regulations to come back at them as long as they can play to that fear. And my book is an argument for liberals accepting that the right to keep and bear arms is an individual right, as the Supreme Court said it was in 2008. But that doesn't mean that reasonable regulations for safety are not possible.
How would someone from the colonial period or just after in early America, where we were thinking about this as a constitutional question, how would they view the arguments of the gun lobby today? With familiarity or with some alarm?
Well, I think with a mixture of both. On the one hand, they had gun regulations at the time. You know, you had to if you were a white male above the age of 18, you were supposed to have a gun and have it ready to serve if you were called up in the militia to defend the country or defend your town against an Indian attack or something like that. They registered guns in communities. You know, they had regulations. But if you went to them and said, well, only if you belong to a militia can you have a gun, they'd have laughed at you because everybody had a gun in those days in the early – well, the late – all through the 17th century and well into the 18th. And even in 1792, after the Constitution was adopted, there was a law requiring adult males who were of conscriptable age to have guns. And so – They thought guns were a self-evident individual right, and yet they had regulations to deal with violence.
Some of the most entertaining parts of this book are where you discuss the history of some carry permit laws, where you know laws are attempted to be created to permit people to carry concealed weapons, but then to try to enforce a set of behaviors, complicated behaviors in some cases, to project a kind of responsible carry conceal permit. Do people view concealed permits as a just a license to be like James Bond, or do they really engage in this as a license to adopt a whole complicated set of other responsible behaviors, like don't stand near a bar or that sort of thing?
Well, I found when I started talking to people who have guns and have carry permits that having a gun often, very often, probably most often, makes the carrier of the gun feel, oh my God, now I've got a gun. I've got to be really careful what I, how I handle it, what I do with it.
The guns are scary.
Well, they are, and they can kill you and kill people. And I think it's not that people want to carry guns so they can pull them out and shoot whenever they feel threatened. That is, to my mind, an irresponsible kind of behavior that's encouraged, unfortunately, by the many stand your ground and castle doctrine laws that the gun lobby has somehow blackmailed or coerced state legislatures into passing. I think if a legislator ought to be ashamed of passing a law that makes it easier to kill.
And in New Hampshire, where you are allowed to carry a gun on the in the state house, and now kids can't come and view the state house in action because the schools believe that it's too dangerous.
Right. Well, people can take things to extreme. Even Justice Scalia, in his 2008 ruling against the District of Columbia's ban on handguns, said longstanding regulations like keeping guns out of places like schools, and one would assume also state legislatures in most places, are not unreasonable.
Do you think we'll get this right, or is it going to be a ships passing in the night kind of non-communicative debate indefinitely?
Well, I'm afraid it will be non-communicative, but there was a little bit of common ground in the last presidential debate between Romney and President Obama, in which they said that gun control laws alone can't solve our gun violence problem. You have to address the behaviors that lead to gun violence, and that means, you know, taking care of people who feel hopeless and educating them and so on. Both of them did agree on that, and I don't think that was insignificant at all.
Craig Whitney is the author of Living with Guns, A Liberal's Case for the Second Amendment. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.